This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott.
The American economy.
Climate change without.
Hacking.
Different religions in America.
Sustainability.
Social media.
Security. Freedom.
Technology.
Marriage.
Essentially ethics.
Privacy.
And this is Rethink 2014, conversations and stories that challenge our habits and assumptions and ways of doing things. Today, rethinking which endangered species to save. Consider the giant panda. Cute, fuzzy, and available for your 24/7 viewing pleasure on the National Zoo's PandaCam. The panda is one of the top five most popular species for conservation. But what about the endangered species that make your skin crawl, like the St. Lucia racer snake or the Lord Howe Island stick insect? Christine Delamore, environment writer and editor for National Geographic News, asks the uncomfortable question of how do we decide which species to save? It's part of Nat Geo's online series called Last of the Last. And Christine Delamore, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
More than 20,000 plants and animals on the verge of disappearing. So which, beside the giant panda, are the most popular species for donors and nonprofit conservation organizations?
Well, often the ones that we feel like we can relate to, kind of look into their eyes and see something of us in them. So maybe your elephant or your tiger. A lot of great ape species are very popular, as well as rhinos. But not so much your snakes and spiders and sort of the creepy crawly guys.
So these are the ones at the top of the food chain and the cutest. Do we have a bias for cute?
Yes, we do, exactly. And a lot of conservationists have recognized that despite, you know, what grand plans they have, we end up really saving what we want to save and what we like. So it's a real dilemma for some of the species that are really important to our environment, like ants, because they play such an important role in keeping our world healthy.
Yeah, hard to make an ant look especially cute.
Yes.
But how does that play out financially in terms of donations to conservation funds?
Well, actually, some conservationist groups have a strategy where they say, okay, let's donate money to the tiger because we know the public likes the tiger. But then what they do is use the tiger as a flagship and conserve an entire area where the tiger lives, and then lesser known species like a wild hog, for example, might benefit from that umbrella protection, even if it's not the target species that they're using to attract the public interest.
Mm-hmm. And this is using what, about $1 billion, I guess you estimated, donated in the name of environmental preservation.
It depends on the species. I believe the tiger had $84 million spent on it in 2011 mm-hmm. alone. So it really is dependent on, you know, what kind of species it is and what conservationist groups are working on it. Right?
So what would be the ecological fallout if we do choose to save the panda or the tiger versus the ants, for example?
Well, a lot of insects, like in my story, I mentioned the American burying beetle, for example. They're crucial to keeping our soil healthy. They eliminate a lot of pests that eat our crops. They aerate the soil. They have a lot of behind-the-scenes roles that might, fall apart if we don't have them around.
Whereas if, say, the big cats disappeared, it's not as if we're going to be overrun by antelopes or something.
Probably not. Of course, they do have their role in the ecosystem. But if you look at a tiger, they're so rare now. I think they're, fewer than 5,000 left. But, their role in the ecosystem has already dwindled quite a bit in terms of their role as a top predator.
So what are the kind of factors that go into determining which species are worth saving or prioritizing?
Mm-hmm. Different countries and different organizations have varying strategies. I mentioned in my article that Australia and New Zealand have just took on an economic approach. So actually putting, data into a model and finding out which species can we save, which can we get the most bang for our buck. And it's extremely important for them because they're island nations and they have invasive species that are destroying a lot of their native animals.
Bang for their buck in terms of what, tourist dollars?
Oh, no. So if they invest, say, X amount of dollars into conserving an animal, will that animal end up succeeding and will it reproduce in the future? They have models for predicting the success of their investment.
What kind of predictions have been made about the giant panda, for example? What would happen if the giant panda went into extinction?
You know, I'm not sure. For the most part, panda conservation is based on the wide, you know, icon and popularity status of the animal. And there are some people who criticize people or zoos for breeding them in captivity when they're not really putting a whole lot in the wild. There have only been three released back into China.
Well, once again, I think I'm giving short shrift to some of those animals or species that we don't hear so much about. What are some of the others that you found in your reporting from six continents?
One of my favorites that we featured in our series was the hellbender. It has a lot of cool names. It's a giant salamander that lives in the eastern United States. Even in New York and parts of New England, you might not have even heard about it, but it's this 3-foot slimy amphibian that lives under rocks and streams, and it's being very heavily impacted by siltation, so buildup of sediment in the river and pollution. But it plays an important role in eating little invertebrates, and it's just a cool animal.
We do have a slideshow from Nat Geo's series, Last of the Last, where we can show listeners some of the species that
Excellent.
Are being threatened. Other factors that determine which species are worth saving or prioritizing even. I'm thinking of an example that you gave in Canada, the Atlantic salmon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one is kind of a combination of economics and cultural icon. So I believe the salmon was worth something like $255 million in 2010, and that's based on tourism dollars, the spending on education programs, a lot of different things. So it drives a lot of the economy, and Canadians are very passionate about the fish in general as kind of a symbol of their culture and their country. And they're willing to spend about a little over $80 a year of their own money to help this fish. So both of those factors are, you know, heavily influencing the conservation element.
It's so interesting that they're taking this kind of ROI approach to it in many different places.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Christine, are we doing this right? I mean, in a perfect world, is there a better model of deciding which species we prioritize in terms of conservation efforts?
I think that largely people need to just look at values. And that's what a lot of conservationists told me, is that the key is to influence people's values. And one of the examples is in China or other parts of Asia, they put shark fins in their soup at weddings. And some of the conservation funds they suggested should go to educating these people about what they're doing to sharks in the ocean and kind of shift the emphasis away from it being a luxury delicacy and toward something that they feel strongly about, that they don't want to be responsible for causing the extinction of a species. And shifting values is extremely difficult, but it seems like most conservationists think that's one of the main drivers in influencing whether a species lives or dies.
Christine Del Moore, environment writer and editor for National Geographic News. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Christine's article, Saving the Earth's Rarest Species, is part of a new National Geographic series called Last of the Last. You can find more, including photographs of some of the adorable and maybe a little less adorable species that she's talking about on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. From Old MacDonald to Itsy Bitsy Spider, animals and insects have long been valued in children's songs. When Word of Mouth continues, we'll talk with the frontman of the Presidents of the United States of America. That's a band that made a whole lot of noise back in the 90s. Now he is making music for kids.
My flea has dogs. He don't know what's wrong. Oh, my flea has dogs.
We'll get a taste when Word of Mouth returns after the break.
What's wrong?